Parshas Tazria, this week's Parsha. We have in Tazria, as well as in Parshas Metzora, a great focus on the prohibition of speaking Lashon Hara. And what you'll find in this week's Parsha is that there is an extreme reaction, an extreme response that the Torah has to somebody who speaks Lashon Hara. So we have, the Torah says, Kol Yemei Asher HaNegabo Yitma Tamehu, somebody who has Tzara'as, and the Gemara assumes that Tzara'as, leprosy, comes to one who speaks Lashon Hara. So the Torah says that that person is considered to be Tameh. And what happens when you are Tameh? What happens when someone is normally Tameh in the community? What? They go to the mikveh. They follow the process. Now, do you move out of your house when you're Tameh? No. Do you have to stay away from other people when you're Tameh? No, they have to stay away from you. Correct? But you're Tameh, and you continue to live as a member of the society. However, here the Torah says, Tamehu, somebody who has tzara'as is considered to be tamei. Badad yeshev mechutz lamachane moshavo. The fact that you are tamei doesn't just say that we brand you by being someone who is impure, but we say you have to leave your community, leave your house, and you have to stay alone. Badad yeshev means you sit alone. Mechutz lamachane moshavo means outside of your community. That is where you belong. And Rashi asked the question, manishtana, why is this tamei different than every other one? We have Tameim, who are Tamei Hayotze Elav Migufo, as the Gemara says. Sometimes you have somebody who has a tuma that comes from their own body. They have an emission from their body which makes them Tamei, a man or a woman. Sometimes you have a tuma that is not something that was created by my body, but something that I came in contact with. Let's say I went to a funeral or something of that nature. But all of them do not add up to what the story of the person who has Tzara'as is. And Rashi wants to know, why is this Tamei considered to be so much more extreme of a response than we have to any of the other Tameim that we find in Chumash? And Rashi famously tells us in the name of Chazal, since you created a separation, you created a distance between a husband and wife or between friends, by the Lashon Hara, by the evil speech that you shared with somebody else, you created a distance between two individuals who used to have a close relationship and now you separated them. Therefore, afu yibadel, the response to what you have done and the terrible relationship that you have now engendered between these two individuals is that now we are going to separate you from the community. It's almost a mida keneged mida. And this is quoted not only in Rashi, but it's in the Gemara Maseches Erechin, Daf Tes Zayin Amud Beis, where the Gemara tells us the same thing. Not only that, the Gemara Maseches Zvachim goes further and says, you're not even allowed to sit with other Tameim. So let's say we have 10 people in the community who all get Tzara'as, which means all of them need to leave. So you'll say, why don't we just have like some house out there over there where everyone's going to go? Says the Gemara, no. Lo yeshev tamei acher imo. You're not allowed to even sit together with other people who are in the same situation as you. The punishment for somebody or part of the process of purification for somebody who gets Tzara'as is you're out and you're out alone, badad, without anyone else, which includes without any other Tmeim, no one's allowed to be with you. Now, not only do we say you have to sit alone, michutz lamachane, not only do we say you have to be by yourself, but beyond that, the Gemara tells us also that a mitzora, somebody who has tzara'as, has to be noheg avelus, has to act like an avel. What does that mean? The Ibn Ezra writes on Chumash, behatam, why do we tell you have to act like an avel? What does it mean, you have to act like an avel? So it says you have to rip your clothing, and rosh yiyeh parua, so the question is why? Says the Ibn Ezra, Sheyis Abel al Roa Maisav. You should be Miss Abel on the terrible person that you are. So you're not in Avelus over somebody else, you're in Avelus over yourself, which is very strange. Usually, Avelus happens after I'm no longer here. People are sad about the fact that I'm gone. But here, I should be sad about the fact that I am. That's what the Avelus of a Mitzvah is all about. Ki ba'avur Maisav ba'lo zehanega. Now, the truth is, the relationship between Lashon Hara and Tzara'as we find in two different places in Chumash. Anybody know where they are? Not in this week's Parsha. Yeah? Miriam and? Someone who's very closely related to Miriam. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech ha'olam shehakol nehiyeh bidvaro. So you had a 50-50 chance of getting that right, and Aaron is not the right answer. So Moshe Rabbeinu. So where do we have it by Moshe and by Miriam? By Miriam, it's much more explicit, where the Torah tells us, as we'll see in a minute, what exactly that was. Miriam spoke Lashon Hara about her brother. What Lashon Hara did she speak? Vatadaber Miriam ve'aron b'Moshe alodos isha hakushis asher lakach. Moshe Rabbeinu married someone. Aaron and Miriam were not comfortable with whoever it is that he married. Isha Akushis, on the simple level, means? It seems, right? It really means from Eretz Kush. It means from the land of Kush. So Moshe Rabbeinu married a woman, and it seemed that they were not happy with Moshe Rabbeinu's choice. And they said, Vayomru, Harak Ach bin Moshe Dibur Hashem. Did Moshe Rabbeinu, is he on a separate level by himself? All of us are Nevi'im. I'm a Navi, my brother Aaron is a Navi, and Moshe Rabbeinu is also a Navi. So why does he think that he's greater than us? As we know, the Torah says Moshe Rabbeinu separated himself from his wife because he felt he was on such a high level of Nevuah, it was not appropriate for him to be together with his wife all the time. So he wasn't. And Aaron and Miriam said, what do you mean? All of us are living regular lives. All of us are married. All of us have families. All of us are leading our lives in a normal fashion. And we also happen to be Nevi'im. So why does Moshe Rabbeinu think he's greater than us? They said something negative about Moshe. Now, what they didn't understand is, yes, all of you are Nevi'im, and all of you communicate with the Ribbono Shel Olam, but Moshe Rabbeinu, as we know, had a different level of communication than any of the other Nevi'im. By Moshe Rabbeinu, we're told, Peh el peh adaber bo, but Mara velo b'chalom. Moshe Rabbeinu was communicated with in a very direct fashion. HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to him directly, Peh el peh, Ka'adam ha-medaber l'chavera, Rashi says, like a person who has a conversation with their friend. That is the kind of conversation that Moshe Rabbeinu had with the Ribbono Shel Olam, which is remarkable. And that was not an experience that was shared by any of the other Nevi'im other than Moshe Rabbeinu. So yes, he was on a league of his own. He was on a layer which they were not on. And they were speaking negatively about him, and they spoke Lashon Hara. And the result of that was, V'hanan sar me'al ha'oel, v'hinei Miriam tzaras kashaleg. Suddenly the reaction, the response to what she said about Moshe was that all of a sudden she has tzaras. Vayifen Aaron al Miriam v'hinei mitzaras. And Aaron looks at Miriam and he says, wow, you have tzaras. Says the Medrash, because tzaras is the natural reaction, the natural response to one who speaks Lashon Hara. So that is story number one that is explicit. Story number two that we have about tzaras is by Moshe Rabbeinu. When did Moshe Rabbeinu ever speak Lashon Hara?
Didn't he get, like, it was one of the Simanim and he spoke Lashon Hara about the Jewish people?
Yes, so when did he speak Lashon Hara about the Jewish people? What did he say?
When he was getting his mission from Hashem and he said, what zochus do they have that they merit to be redeemed?
Halfway there, you're confusing two different stories, but you're close. So Moshe Rabbeinu, Avraham Avinu said, what zochus, bameh eidaki ereshenah? That's Avraham Avinu says, the Jewish people are going to do things wrong. Who said they're going to have the opportunity to do things right? And maybe they're never going to have the opportunity to come back to Eretz Yisrael. That was Avraham Avinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, as you very correctly stated, is given instructions to go negotiate with Paro. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, here are all the simanim, here are all the different things you should do, take the stick with you, and all different things. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, Vayomer Hashem lo. Hashem says to him, Od havei na yarcha dechekecha. He says, I want you to put your hand in your chekecha, means in your pocket. And when he took it out, all of a sudden he had tzaras. Ask the Medrash, why did Moshe Rabbeinu get tzaras? What did he do wrong? Now, if you just read the Psukim in Chumash, it seems that was one of the signs that he was given. However, the Medrash tells us that what that was all about was that Moshe Rabbeinu hurled an accusation against the Jewish people at that time. He spoke Lashon Hara about them. What did he say? Moshe Rabbeinu said, Vehein lo yishmu b'koli. The Jewish people are not going to listen when I come and say, it's time for you to go free, it's time to get out of Mitzrayim. The Jewish people are not going to listen to what I have to say. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, who are you to say that the Jewish people are not going to listen to you? How can you make such an accusation against the entire Jewish community? It's not true. It happens to be the Netziv has an amazing comment on Chumash where he writes on that pasuk, Behein lo yishmu b'koli, he says, in every generation, there are people who say, we don't believe that Geula is coming. The end of the pasuk by Moshe Rabbeinu is, Behein lo yishmu b'koli, because they're going to say, Lo nira elecha Hashem. They're going to say, there's no way the Ribbono Shel Olam communicated with you. That cannot be. And this is not a time for Geula. Says the Netziv, we have seen throughout history that in every generation there are always naysayers and there are always people who are trying to deny the possibility of Geula. And I really feel as we get closer to Pesach, I don't know if I mentioned this here or not, but I did see a comment of the Pele Yoetz last week where he writes that part of the preparation that we need to do for Pesach is, of course, we need to clean our homes and we need to do all kinds of different things to prepare for the Seder. and to make sure everything's ready. But beyond that, he says, we need to realize, B'nisan asidin le'igayel, this is a month of Geulah, and we need to think and daven and pray for the realistic possibility of Geulah in our lives. That's part of the preparation for Pesach. We all need to think about what that would look like. And I firmly believe, maybe I'm wrong, but I firmly believe that people are afraid of a Geulah. Like we have, right, correct? Right? Why are they afraid of a Geulah? It's unknown. We don't know exactly what it's going to be. Nobody can really tell us what that reality is going to look like. And what's going to be with my job, right? Where are you? Next year? UBS, right? UBS, what's going to be with UBS? UBS is going to move to Israel? What am I going to do? I got hired for a job. I was an intern last summer. You know, what's going to be with everything? What? Everything. I believe people are afraid of a Geulah, but yet as Jews, we're supposed to say, Achakar lo b'chol yom she'yavo. We do believe in a Geula and we yearn for a Geula. So how much do we yearn for a Geula when in fact we're afraid of it? This is the right time to think about it. Number one, because we see Geula unfolding in front of us. There's no other way to explain what's going on. Not just now, but over the last 75 years. And beyond that, we're supposed to always be thinking about a Geula, and especially during this time of the year, when we come to celebrate Pesach, it's an appropriate time to think about Geula. So Moshe Rabbeinu speaks negatively against the Jewish people and he says, listen, they're going to say, Lo nirei lecha Hashem. They're going to say, God did not appear to you. We're not going to listen to you. We don't believe that Geula is really going to happen. And then Nitziv writes, in every generation that is what occurred. There were always people that said that. But along comes the Medrash and says, that is the direct correlation between the simon that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives him and the words that he said. You spoke negatively about the Jewish people. The reaction to that is going to be, you are going to be inflicted with tzaras. So we see two different times in Chumash that there's a connection between these two things. So much so, the Gemara says in Maseches Erechin, you know, there are so many different prohibitions we can violate throughout our experience as Jews. There are many things that people do wrong. Unfortunately, we all make mistakes. We do things wrong. So some people are not as careful about kosher food as they should be, and some people are not so careful about what they look at, where they go. The brachos that they make, I don't know. Everyone has challenges. Everyone has things. Maybe some people aren't Shomer Shabbos the way they should. All right. Says the Gemara. We don't find this comment about many other things. The Gemara doesn't say that somebody who's Shomer Shabbos, God is so angry at him that he says, I don't know. But listen to this comment of the Gemara. Kala misaper lashon hara. Somebody who speaks or engages in lashon hara. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ein ani v'hu yecholin ladur ba'olam. You know what that means? I and this person cannot live in the world together. That's an amazing comment. So the Ribbono Shel Olam, God doesn't say that about someone who doesn't keep Shabbos. He doesn't say, I'm so infuriated by this individual who doesn't keep Shabbos properly that, you know what? It's either me or him. One of us has got to go. And you know when you're in a fight with God and one of you has to go, it's not going to be God, right? He's going to be here. Maybe you're going to be the one who won't be here. But the Gemara says that HaMasaper Lashon Hara, somebody who speaks Lashon Hara, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Ein ani v'hu yecholin ladur ba'olam. It's very interesting that some Rishonim understand that the whole story of Tzaras is really just like a contagious illness. The Ramban writes on Chumash, it has nothing to do with anything spiritual, which is very hard to understand. If you speak Lashon Hara, then you're going to get an illness that is going to inflict your body that is contagious, and that's why you have to go out of the community. It's a reality, it's a phenomenon that we're not familiar with, but that is the way the Ramban, the Chizkuni, other Rishonim explain. Anyway, there's a lot of discussion to be had about the story of Tzaras, but be it as it may, there was a great tzaddik who passed away in the mid-1800s. His name was Reb Yisrael Lifshitz. He wrote a sefer on Mishnayos called Tiferes Yisrael, which is a very important sefer. And in his introduction to Maseches Negayim, which is one of the Masechtos HaMishnayos that is very, very rarely learned by people, in his introduction to Maseches Negayim, he writes, Miyamai Tamati. I always laugh when I talk about Negayim. After Rav Asher Weiss's wife passed away, so he decided that he was going to get together with his grandchildren every Matzah Shabbos, and they were going to learn the Ilui Nishmas. Very nice, great. So they came to the house, and they decided that, they were going to learn Maseches Negayim. You can't get more boring than that. Maseches Negayim is a Masechta Mishnayos that talks about the different shades of white that you see on the person who has Tzaras, and how white is it and how dark is it and what shades are there when you look in the sunlight, you don't look. Whatever. That's what he decided to learn. And he said, you know, it was so strange. After we finished Negayim, they said, Saba, Zaidi, why don't we learn something else? So I was talking to him when all this was going on, and I said, like, you know, why don't you learn Pirkei Avos? Like, maybe that would be nice. And I said to him, maybe all of us would gain if you learn Pirkei Avos, because then you would have what to say on Pirkei Avos that all of us would be interested in hearing, and you'll publish it. So that's what they did. His grandchildren actually wrote down every week the weekly learning of Pirkei Avos, and now that's the Sefer Minchas Asher on Pirkei Avos is from that. But it started off with Nigayim. So the Tiferes Yisrael writes in his introduction to Maseches Nigayim, Miyamai Tamati, I always wondered, Al ha de'ein anu noagim taharas hamatzorah b'zman hazeh. Why are we not careful? We have a whole parsha in the Torah this week, Tazriah and Metzorah, where we talk about somebody who has Tzaras and how do we purify them. Why do we not have that purification process today? You have seen people who have skin illnesses, correct? You've seen people who have blotches on their skin here and there. So why don't we assume that we should look into it? We should investigate. Maybe this is Tzaras. And if so, maybe we have to send you out of the community until you get better. Why do we not have any mention of this in any recent history? This is the question that the Tiferes Yisrael asked, which in essence is really a stunning question. The Torah does not say that the whole story of Tzaras only applies when you have a Beis HaMikdash. The Torah just tells us the rules of somebody who's a Metzorah. So why is it that this doesn't apply in our times? This is a question that not only is asked by the Tiferes Yisrael, it's also asked by Rabbi Yitzchak Shmelkish in his Sefer Beis Yitzchak. He was one of the great Gedolim in Europe. Yerach Sameach has a discussion about it as well in his commentary on the Rambam. But the Tiferes Yisrael writes the following, Zacharti Yamim Mikedem, and I remember many years ago when I was younger, Shebi Yaldusi, when I was a child, Hitzati Tmihasi Zu L'Hagon Rabbi Kiva Eger. He said, I bumped into Rabbi Kiva Eger one day, and I asked him this question. Now, what do I take from that? I take from that, are all of us prepared that one day we may bump into Rabbi Kiva Eger on the street and have a good question for him? I'm prepared because I speak to my father every day and I'm nervous. He's going to ask me, what are you working on? What are you doing? And then I sound like a fool if I have nothing to say. But not everybody thinks that way. But the Tiferes Yisrael says, I once had the occasion to meet Rabbi Kiva Eger and I asked him this. Of course I was going to ask him this. What else was I going to talk to him about? Rabbi Leibowitz and I always talk about it. Like, do you have something prepared to talk to a great person when you bump into them at a wedding? Like, otherwise, what a chaval, a wasted opportunity. Get stuck at a wedding longer than you want it to be, and you're sitting at a table with someone who you can actually talk to, but you have nothing to say. Chaval. So, just putting it out there. So, along comes the Tiferes Yisrael. I wouldn't suggest asking this question, because it's not, you know, wouldn't be my first choice. Why do we not have Mitzorah Bizman Hazeh? I don't know. There are other things that bother me more than this, but the Tiferes Yisrael says that he came across Rabbi Kiva Eger, and he asked him this question, what's the story? Why is there no Tzaras today? V'hashiveni. And he answered me, Shagam hu tama al davar hazeh, that he himself also was bothered by the same question, v'she'en lo teretz hamakuv al hadas, and he doesn't have a good answer that could explain why it is that we don't have the story of Tzaras or of Negayim or Mitzorah today. It's a pasuk in Chumash, and there's no indication in the Chumash that it shouldn't apply today. So why doesn't it? This is the million-dollar question, and it's hard to answer exactly how to explain it. Now, the Tiferes Yisrael himself writes that perhaps the reason why is because when one is a Mitzorah, the Torah says they have to shave the hair on their entire body. Their whole body has to be shaven, which is part of the process of purification. Now, says the Tiferes Yisrael, there are certain areas of the body where a man, for sure, is not allowed to shave. Right? Let's say, Pa'as HaRosh, he's not allowed to shave his payas. So, a Mitzorah has a special dispensation that the Torah says you have to shave all the hair on your body, so he's allowed to. But if we live at a time where we're not exactly sure what Tzaras is, how can we tell a person to violate the Aveira of shaving his head when we know that it's not 100% sure that he's going to be doing the right thing? Now, says the Tiferes Yisrael, that all makes sense, but if you look carefully, the Torah says there's also a concept of Tzaras on the homes. So if we have Tzaras on the homes, why doesn't that apply today? If you see some staining on somebody's, you know, perimeter of their house, why don't we start having Kohanim look at it to decide whether or not that is actually Tzaras? We don't apply that today either. This is a big discussion in the Tiferes Yisrael, and I think it's a very interesting one. But now, a slightly similar question from the other side goes as follows. The Chafetz Chaim asks in the Sefer Shmiras Halasho, why is it that we have so many people, I don't know if you know these people, but I am one of them, unfortunately, who speak Lashon Hara every once in a while. I don't always say the right thing, and I'm not always as careful as I should be. Says the Chafetz Chaim, why is it that we have so many people who speak Lashon Hara and yet none of them become Mitzorayim? Why don't we find that anybody who speaks Lashon Hara is inflicted with leprosy? How strange is that? Asked the Chafetz Chaim. No? Isn't that a good question? We're asking the question in the other direction. How come when somebody gets a blotch on their skin, why don't we start looking into it to decide whether or not it's taras? But says the Chafetz Chaim, how come we know people that speak Lashon Hara? Right? I can't say all the bloggers, but look at the bloggers, the podcasters, look what they do. This is their job, the news agencies. Their job is to speak negatively about other people and share the information as widely as possible, correct? This is what they do. How do they not have taras? Why do they not have taras, says the Chafetz Chaim. So this is a big question that he asks. And he writes that perhaps the answer is that there are other ways that they're going to be punished because somebody who's poor is also considered like a mitzvah. I don't know. But sometimes you find that people speak Lashon Hara and are not poor and they seem to be getting away with it. Anyway, it's a problem. So the Chafetz Chaim says the answer is, the reason why we don't have, he gives a practical answer, the reason why we don't have mitzvah b'zman hazeh, why do people not get inflicted? He said is because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, which means we don't have Karbanos, and we also don't have a Kohen who is able to do the service on our behalf. Now, part of the purification process of a mitzvah is, after you go through your time out of the community, and after you have the time to think for yourself of what you've done wrong, and purify your own thoughts, then we say you bring a Karban to the Beis HaMikdash, and as you bring the Karban to the Beis HaMikdash, that is going to finish off your purification process. Says the Chafetz Chaim, would it make sense that somebody who doesn't have the ability to ever purify himself because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we don't have Karbanos, and we don't have Kohanim, is it fair to tell that person that for the rest of his life he should be considered a Mitzorah? That wouldn't make sense. That's a punishment that's way beyond anything you've done. And therefore, says the Chafetz Chaim, that is why we don't have a Mitzorah Bizman Hazeh, because we have no way of getting out of the problem of Tzaras, so it would be impossible for the Ribono Shel Olam to put you into the problem of Tzaras. Anyway, we know that Tzaras is something, as the Gemara says, has a relationship that is very closely connected to one who speaks Lashon Hara. And what I find very interesting is, if you were to define what is the characteristic that separates man from the rest of creation, what would that be? His ability to speak. The Torah says, Vayihi ha'adam l'nefesh chaya. The Torah says in Parshas Bereishis, man is described as a nefesh chaya. What exactly does that mean? Targum Unkelis writes there on the Pasuk that the person was the ruach memalala. We became human beings. Now, what is the definition of a human being? He's a ruach memalala. We are a spirit that speaks, that knows how to communicate. That is the essence of what a human being is. There are many other animals in the animal kingdom that know how to make noise. They chirp and they neigh and they sing and they hum and they do whatever they do, but they don't communicate the way we do. The greatness of the human being is that the human being has the ability to communicate and to use his voice, to use his mouth. And that is a responsibility that we all have, to use it in the proper fashion and to speak positively and to bring about positivity, because the mouth is really what defines us as human beings. So much so, the Gemara says in Maseches Psachim, even when you need to talk about something bad, every once in a while, things happen. You know, I remember there was a Rav who told me, and he's a very prominent Rav. And every so often in the Rabbanus, you hear, not every so often, every day, you hear, you know, sometimes lots of great things and sometimes negative things, right? Somebody comes to talk to you about an issue, whatever it may be. So he said him and his wife had a policy. Whenever we need to talk something over about something that's going on in the community that's negative, we go outside. They stand on the porch. Our house is a positive place. We don't talk negativity in our house. Now, we don't talk negativity in our house, but sometimes we need to talk about negative things because we have to know what's going on. We made a rule. We don't talk about negativity in our house. We'll go to the porch. If it means we're on the porch for an hour and a half, that's what it is. But we don't talk negativity in our house. I was so inspired by that, by a person who has such self-control to understand our mouths are to be used for positive things. Every so often you have to talk about negative things. All right, but you should at least remind yourself that that's not what I'm here for. That's really not supposed to be the default position. So much so, the Gemara says, when you have something negative that needs to be shared, you should formulate it in a way that is a little bit more positive. So for example, the Torah says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had different kinds of animals, and we're told, Min HaBehema HaTahora, Umin ha-behema asher einenu tahora. That's talking about in Parshas Noach, where he was supposed to bring from all the different animals into the teva. So we're told in the Chumash, he had to bring from the behema ha-tahora, from the kosher animals, and from the behema asher einenu tahora. Says the Gemara, would it not have been simpler to say, bring from the kosher animals and bring from the non-kosher animals? Says the Gemara, yes, it would have been easier to say that, and it would have been fewer letters to say that and fewer words. But yet, the Torah goes out of its way to add 8 extra letters. Akam shmona osios. The Torah puts 8 extra letters to tell me, mena behema asher einenu tahora. It's not tahor. The easier way to say it would be, it's tame. But says the Gemara that we're supposed to try to train ourselves to be careful, to speak in a certain way, in which we have the ability to show that our mouths are ones that we use for positivity. Our mouths are ones that we use to make sure that we are doing the right thing and saying the right thing. The Chafetz Chaim says, well, you know, it's very overwhelming to think about reading the Sefer Shmiras HaLashon, because once I read it, then I'm going to be bound by what it is that I see. And it's very scary to think about how many prohibitions one violates whenever they speak Lashon Hara. So says the Chafetz Chaim, I met people in my life who said, you know what, forget it. I'm just not going to get involved, and then I don't know. And then I'm just simply not aware. And maybe that's a better way to live life. So the Chafetz Chaim said a mashal that reminded him of. So he said, imagine you have a person who's traveling on the highway. And he says that this highway was one that he was warned in advance. He was advised in advance that you have to really be using a lot of caution on this highway, because there are ditches, there are potholes all over the place, and it's dark, and you can't always see so well. You got to be very careful. So the Chafetz Chaim, this is in the Sefer Avas Chesed, he writes that somebody comes along and says, oh, I have a great idea. I know how you're going to be successful in walking through in traveling on this highway. You know how? Bring me a cloth. Okay, goes to get a napkin, comes back. What would you like me to do with the cloth? Brings the cloth and blindfolds him. Okay, now travel on the highway. Now that you're blindfolded, everything's going to be fine. So says the Chafetz Chaim, now everything's going to be fine. Now everything's even more dangerous. To go on a dangerous road with your eyes blindfolded doesn't mean that the pitfalls aren't there. Doesn't mean that the danger went away. It just means you're simply not aware of it. And when you fall, you're going to be even more surprised than you would have been had you saw it before. So says the Chafetz Chaim, he felt that was the same attitude that people had when they talk about the prohibition of Lashon Hara. Some people say this is too overwhelming, it's too difficult, and therefore, let's pretend like it doesn't exist. Let's just wrap a napkin around our eyes, let's tie it around our face, and let's pretend like this whole issue doesn't exist at all. That doesn't help you get around the problem. That's just a way of pretending like the problem doesn't exist. But the problem is here. The Chafetz Chaim, actually, we're told in one of the Svarim, it's called Meir Eine Yisrael. It was one of the biographies of the Chafetz Chaim. It said that when he got to the age of 70, he made a big celebration. Now, why did he make a big celebration? Because he liked birthday parties? Of course not. Why did the Chafetz Chaim make himself a big celebration? Because he said that until he was 70 years old, he was concerned that maybe there would be a Chilul Hashem. Maybe there would be a Chilul Hashem? You think the Chafetz Chaim is going to make a Chilul Hashem? What was he possibly going to do that could have ever made a Chilul Hashem? So the Chafetz Chaim said as follows. I work my whole life on Shmiras HaLashon. Everybody knows I'm not just the Chafetz Chaim, I'm not just the Mishneh Berurah, I am the one who wrote the Sefer on Lashon Hara. Said the Chafetz Chaim, what is the one pasuk that we all know about the prohibition of Lashon Hara? What do we all know? What does the Torah say? Mi ha'isha Chafetz Chaim. Oev yamim liras tov, netzar l'shon chameira, usvasecha midaber mirma. Who is the person who wants a long life? Someone who's careful. Netzar l'shon chameira. That's oev yamim liras tov. That's the one who's going to have a long, extended life because they are careful about the way they speak. Said the Chafetz Chaim, I was worried my whole life. If I die at 50, that's a tremendous Chilul Hashem. Why is it a Chilul Hashem? Because everybody knows I'm Mr. Lashon Hara man. And look what happened to him. He's so careful about Lashon Hara. He died at 50. He died at 60. Once he made it to 70, he said, it's reasonable for someone to die at 70 and no one's going to have questions. That's already, he lived a long life. But he said, I was worried until I reached the age of 70 that maybe if I die now, it's going to be a Chilul Hashem because people are going to say the words of the Pasuk are not true. Words of the Pasuk are not true. Actually, in fact, the Chafetz Chaim writes in one of his Svarim, in Hilchos Lashon Hara, he writes in Sif Aleph, actually, that there is a difference between somebody who speaks Lashon Hara privately, between a conversation that they have with their friend. It's in Klal Gimel, Hilchos Lashon Hara, Sif Aleph, for those who are looking. So the Chafetz Chaim compares and contrasts whether somebody who speaks Lashon Hara privately is worse than somebody who speaks Lashon Hara in public. Which one is better and which one is worse? On the one hand, he says, if I speak Lashon Hara in private and I just share it with another individual, so then he says, I'm in violation of the prohibition not only of Lashon Hara, but also Arur Make Re'ehu Basaser. Arur Make Re'ehu Basaser means hitting somebody when they can't see, damaging someone when they're not aware of it. There's a separate prohibition in the Torah of doing such a thing. So says the Chafetz Chaim, if I'm going to speak privately with my friend and share negative information about another person, that can be not only a violation of Lashon Hara, but also a violation of Arur Make Re'ehu Basaser. On the other hand, says the Chafetz Chaim, if I'm going to share the information publicly, so then I'm not violating Arur Make Re'ehu Basaser, but I am violating Halbanas Panim. I am humiliating, I'm shaming this person in front of others. It is a public humiliation, and that is something that also has a very serious prohibition that comes along with it. So the Chafetz Chaim basically comes to the conclusion that it's important for us to be careful, not only when we are in public, but also when we are in private. Each of those are extremely critical for us to keep in mind, but it's hard for us. The Gemara says that most people are punished la'achar me'ev asrim shana for speaking Lashon Hara, because it's very, very hard. We are social creatures. We are people who like to talk to others. We are people who interact with others all the time, and it's hard. It's hard to be very careful without stepping over the line. Now, although it's true that we have to be very careful with the way we speak, the question then becomes, when am I supposed to be honest and actually share what I feel? So on the other hand, the Chafetz Chaim says you have to make sure that you have a proper balance of when it is that you're supposed to say negative information and when it is that it's inappropriate to share negative information. So the Chafetz Chaim says, for example, if let's say somebody calls you with information about a shidduch and you want to know, they want to know what you know about this person. It's a good friend of yours. So you happen to know some negative character traits. So you have to figure out, are you doing a favor by not sharing those pieces of information? You have to take into account, says the Chafetz Chaim, you may be in violation of Lo Samad Al Dam Reyecha. If let's say you know somebody has some kind of addiction or somebody has some kind of major psychiatric illness and you are not going to share it. Again, if you are privy to the information and you are not allowed to share it, then you're not allowed to share it. You have to ask a different shayla. But if you have the information and other people have it as well, but the person calling about the shidduch doesn't know, so then you really have to think long and hard. Are you doing them a favor by not sharing this information, or are you doing them a disservice because in the end, the shidduch is not going to work out? They're going to get married, then the psychiatric illness is going to present itself. Dr. Pelkowitz once told me that he thinks it's very important when a couple dates, they should at least spend one Shabbos together, a full Shabbos together, before they get engaged. Why? He said, because when you go on a date, you can be on your best behavior for how many hours? So you go on a long date, 5 hours, 6 hours, 10 hours, right? You spend the whole day together. How long are you going to behave for? He said, if you spend 24 hours of Shabbos together, and of course, when the chassan or the kala, when the boy or the girl go to each other's homes, you don't go to sleep at 9 o'clock on Friday night, you're up till midnight, then you wake up the next morning, you're together, you walk to shul together, you walk home from shul together, you're together the whole afternoon. You spend a lot of time. He said, it's impossible for someone to behave for that long. And very often, he says, you'll be able to see a lot of different character traits that come out of a person after you spend that much time with them. It's important. It's important. But sometimes it's also important as friends to know what we're supposed to share with other people who call us, and what we're not supposed to share. I find it particularly challenging as a rabbi. People call me all the time, and there's a lot of personal information that I know about others. Now, if I'm going to breach people's confidentiality, someone comes to me before Yom Kippur and wants to know, am I allowed to take my medication on Yom Kippur? So now I know you're on medication. So now what's going to happen? If I share that information with somebody who calls for a shidduch, then next year before Yom Kippur, who's going to want to ask a question? I can't breach my confidentiality. I can't say that. Of course I can't say that. But at the same time, is there a way that that information can be shared? So what I try to do is, whenever somebody shares confidential information with me that is relevant for other people to know at some point, I make a point of telling them, you know that when it comes time for you to get married, you're going to have to share this. It's important for you to know how to share it, for you not to run away from your own issue, and for you to confront it, and for you to have a way to share it in an appropriate manner and at the appropriate time. It doesn't mean before a first date you have to spill out everything about yourself. We all have things about ourselves that are not perfect, but it's important that, number one, that we uphold confidentiality. Our whole society runs on confidentiality. I remember when we were having our first child, so we went into the hospital Friday afternoon. It was Shabbos of Hanukkah. We went into the hospital and there was a young young, what's it called, in the hospital? No, a doctor, a resident, thank you. A young resident who had just graduated YU a couple of years prior, who happened to be on the floor that, you know, at that point. About 5 minutes later, I start getting messages from people in YU, and I'm like, what? And basically, this resident had texted his brother in YU, like, Rav Schechter's having a grandchild. And I was like, this is the greatest breach of confidentiality ever in the history. It's like amazing, right? And it made us very uncomfortable. Now, why am I uncomfortable that somebody knows I'm in the hospital having a baby? It doesn't really matter to me, but it's not right. It's not right. Our society runs on confidentiality. I didn't do anything about it because I don't care enough, but, and it also wasn't damaging to me. It didn't really matter, but we all have to be careful. Confidentiality is very, very important, and we need that people should be able to trust us when they share information with us. They have to be able to trust that we're not going to spread it further. At the same time, there's a careful balance. If you're not bound by confidentiality, but you happen to know things about someone, you have to be very very careful. The Chafetz Chaim writes in another place. I think I saw this also in the Sefer Meir Eine Yisrael, which is the biography of the Chafetz Chaim. He says, someone who speaks Lashon Hara is clearly someone who doesn't believe in the coming of Mashiach. What is the connection? So the Chafetz Chaim between the coming of Mashiach and Lashon Hara. So he says, we know that Chazal tell us the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sinas China, which means naturally that if you want to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, you have to do the opposite. You have to bring about Avas China. If you speak negatively about other people and you engender negative feelings between two individuals, you are obviously pushing Sinas Chinam further and further into the Jewish community. And therefore, says the Chafetz Chaim, it's clear to me that somebody who doesn't really watch over the way they speak carefully is somebody who also does not believe in the coming of Mashiach. The Chafetz Chaim actually writes in his introduction, you can look this up, Chaviva, Chafetz Chaim writes in his introduction to the Sefer, how could it be? So many people, how many of you in the room are looking for a shidduch? I assume most are not married, right? So you're willing to do lots of things to get a shidduch. Now, of course, naturally, you're willing to go on a date. You're willing to network. You're willing to go on a Shabbaton, whatever, meet a shadchan, whatever. People are willing to do lots of things. What if you see it's not working? So what do you do then? What do you do then? What do people do? From people, what do they do when they panic? That they don't have a parnasa, they can't get a job, I can't get a shidduch. What do you do?
Daven.
What else do you do?
Cry.
Cry. What else do you do? Cry when you daven. That's a good thing. Okay, what else do you do?
Go to your rabbi.
Go to your rabbi, not me. You go to big people, right? You go to big people and you ask for a bracha, right? We live in a generation where people are very excited about such things. You go for a bracha for this, you go for a skula for that, correct? This is how it works. Says the Chafetz Chaim, I'm going to read you his words. Heich yicholos lachol aleinu berchosav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If the Ribono Shel Olam has, you got married without a skula, without a bracha. Lucky you. Okay? But let's say, or maybe you did, I don't know. Heich yicholos lachol aleinu berchosav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How can the Ribono Shel Olam give us a bracha that he's waiting to give us when, says the Chafetz Chaim, if somebody speaks Lashon Hara, the Torah says, Arur make re'ehu basaser. The Torah says, you are cursed if you speak Lashon Hara. So how do you expect a bracha to come into your life when the Ribono Shel Olam himself, who gives you the blessing, is the one who said, you are cursed for behaving this way? So the Chafetz Chaim said, you can run around the world, and he says, Pelehu be'enai. This is in Shmiras HaLashon, Chelek Be'ez Perek Tes. Look this up. Chelek Be'ez Perek Tes, he says, Pelehu be'enai. I'm reading his words. Sheteva b'nei adam lechapes sgulos ubrachos me'anashim gedolam la'atzlacha ala parnasa. There are people who will run around the world to get a skula for a parnasa. Parnasa is very important. And some people are willing to go to great lengths to have a skula for parnasa. Mayo ilu kol haskulos v'habrachos. What will all the skulas in the world and all the blessings you're going to get from the rabbi, imchas v'shalom, humurgo b'zeh hachet shalashon hara. If a person has become accustomed to speaking negatively about others, what is the bracha going to help you? After all, the Torah says you are cursed. The Torah says, Arur makir re'eo basaser. If the Torah says that about you, how are you going to undo that? And therefore, the Chafetz Chaim says, he encourages us, if you want bracha in your life, you should be careful, you should make sure that you are going to follow this edict of the Torah, not to speak Lashon Hara, because Lashon Hara doesn't only bring to tzaras. Lashon Hara brings to other things that the Torah discusses as well, as we mentioned, Arur Make Re'ehu Basaser. Now the Chafetz Chaim warns us in Klal Yud, in Shmiras HaLashon as well, maybe we'll close with this, and he says, you have to understand, speaking Lashon Hara about an individual is one thing. Speaking Lashon Hara about a community is far more serious. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, Kol Shekein, Im Mevaze Avur Zeh, Stam Lechol Ha'ir, if you make a flippant comment about someone, that's one thing. But if you make a comment about a community, you know, I hate these people that do this. You know, all the Svartim are like that. And all the Lubavitchers are like this. And all the people who live in Williamsburg do that. I'm just giving example. I have nothing against any of them. But sometimes you hear people speaking that way where they're just willing to write off the whole community because of something that they saw happen. Says the Chafetz Chaim, you need to realize, Lashon Haran ish prati, Lashon Haran, one person is bad enough. If you're going to just take a paintbrush and say Lashon Hara on a whole community, you have to realize the gravity of what it is that you're doing in those words that you're sharing. And I feel in our community, I don't mean our, but in our society, where it's so easy to write a comment, to write a response, to just post something without even thinking about the implication of what it is that you're saying. Number one, just realize, when there's an article out there and you comment on it, and you're talking about an individual who's mentioned in that article, you need to realize what the implication of that may be. If that article then has an accusation against a community, let's say now, a lot of discussions about the Haredim, the draft, it's right, it's wrong, and those in the government who are pushing the draft, those in the other establishments who are not, I don't know who's right or wrong. I have no idea. I think this is an impossible situation, and I don't know the right answer. But just realize, if you're going to share a comment about that story, and you feel that your position is so well considered and so well thought out, just be very careful about the sentiments that you share. Realize that you're talking not about an individual, you're talking about an entire community made up of tens of thousands of people. And that, says the Chafetz Chaim, in his words is, Avon gadol ad me'od. Avon pelili, he says. That is an egregious sin for a person to do that. Not only that, the Chafetz Chaim then talks about, how do you do tshuva for speaking Lashon Hara? So, I feel that I slighted someone. I feel I did something wrong. Let's say, for example, take a totally different example. The Gemara says in Maseches Baba Kama, let's say I steal money from someone. How do I steal money? Now, most of us would not go and just rummage through someone's bag and take all their money out of their wallet. That's not what we're talking about. What would we do, potentially? You're driving in a parking lot, and you happen to hit someone's mirror, and you scrape the car a little bit. Now, you have now stolen from them because you lowered the value of the car, or they're going to have to pay to get that fixed. And very often you say, not such a big deal, doesn't really matter. Okay, let's say I do that. Let's say I hit someone's mirror, I damage someone's car, I scrape the back of the car, whatever it may be, and I drive off. Then I feel bad about it. A few days later, I'm like, why did I do that? But I know whose car it was, so I go back, and I pay money to the person who I damaged. Now, did I do the right thing? And now I'm doing the right thing. Did I do the right thing at the time to drive away? No. Okay, but I can do tshuva for that by making good the thing that I messed up a couple of days ago. What happens, says the Gemara, Gazal HaSarabim? What if I steal from lots of people? How do I do tshuva for that? Now, what does it mean I steal from lots of people? Let's say I own a store, and every time people come and they pay at the cashier, instead of giving them the exact change you're supposed to have, I give $1 less, I give... every once in a while, someone's going to catch me. Oh, I made a mistake, I'm sorry, give back the dollar. But most of the customers won't even count. They just put it straight into their wallet. So now I accumulated thousands of dollars, and I realized I've done something wrong, but I was gazal es harabim. I can't go back and pay each person. I don't know what it is. So the Gemara says, if gazal es harabim, yasa bahem tzarchei rabim. Go give money to the local mikvah. Go give money to the local shul. Go give money to the local library. Do something that all the people who you stole from are going to benefit from. So if I give $1,000 to the mikvah, and most of the people who are buying in my store are going to end up using that mikvah, then they're benefiting from whatever it is that I stole from them. And I don't have to make a whole public declaration. It's good enough just to do that. Here, says the Chafetz Chaim, if you compare that to one who speaks Lashon Hara against the community, how am I supposed to ask mechila from an entire community? If I spoke Lashon Hara negatively about a person, and I caused damage to that individual by what it is that I shared, then how is it that I can do tshuva? I'll go to that person and I'll make up with them, and I'll apologize, and either they'll accept it or they won't. But let's say I speak about an entire community. What are you going to do? You're going to take out an ad in the newspaper and say, by the way, this is what I did? It's very, very difficult to do that. And says the Chafetz Chaim, therefore, it's important always to think about the way we speak, but certainly when we're dealing with an entire community, to be extra careful. Let me just close with one line of the Kutzker. He said it in Hebrew originally, but it's been translated into English. Not all that is thought needs to be said. Not all that is said needs to be written. not all that is written needs to be published, and not all that is published needs to be read. I think it's an amazing quote of the Kotzker. Sometimes we think things, we don't always have to share what we think. And even if we share it, it doesn't always have to be shared in writing. Relationships can be destroyed through text messages. We've seen it. Someone misunderstands you. You shared something that you should have shared in person, or maybe you shouldn't have shared, but you texted it. And it's such a mistake. Our inflection is not there. It's such a mistake to write it. Even when you write something, not everything that people write to you or that you write to them needs to be publicized. Why would you publicize that? I wrote to you in a private conversation. You don't have a right to publicize that. But also on the flip side, on our perspective as the consumer, not everything that's published needs to be read. Sometimes we drive ourselves crazy because of the things that we read. My father always said, again, when I was younger, it doesn't happen so much now. When I was younger, my father was attacked mercilessly in the newspapers all the time. There were people who wanted to destroy him, and he was attacked all the time. My father always said, you know, by the left of the community, my father always said, my nekama for them, how do I get back at them? Obviously, he's not going to do anything back. He said, my nekama for them is, I'm not going to read it. You attack me in the newspaper, guess what? I'm not going to read it. And you know how much happier of a life you live if you just don't read it? Who cares? Again, it's important to know what people feel. But you know what? You don't have to read everything. People share so much negativity and it brings us down. Don't read it. Don't look at it. Don't go on every website. Don't read every Facebook post. It makes you feel down when you look at what your friend who lives in the Heights made for her husband for dinner that night. You know what? Don't look at their stupid posts. Don't read what it is that they posted they had for dinner. And don't look at the vacations that they're having. Don't read it, and you'll have a much happier life. And says the Kotzker, that is stam, a general rule. Not everything that we think needs to be said. Not everything that we say needs to be written. Not everything that's written needs to be published. And not everything that's published needs to be read. It's in our control to be those kinds of people that are not just going to consume everything that comes our way. We don't have to. We can just say no. We can just ignore it. We don't have to be a part of it. I think as we read the Parsha of Tazria and Metzora, we have an opportunity to think about how severe the Torah considers the prohibition of Tzaras, of Lashon Hara, with the reaction and the response of Tzaras, which is so extreme, where we tell a person, you're not just a Tameh, but Badad Yeshev, out of the community. Not just out of the community, you can't even sit with other Tameim. You're totally out. And the Torah is trying to emphasize to us, even if we don't have Tzaras Bizman Hazeh, for whatever technical reason that it is, that the Chafetz Chaim speaks about, or the Tiferes Yisrael, the bottom line is, Tzaras is something that is certainly a very extreme punishment for one who speaks Lashon Hara. And what the Torah is trying to instill into all of us is that Lashon Hara is something that can destroy society. It's something that can rip the fabric of society apart. And that is why the Torah feels that it is so important that we emphasize what it is that can be positive relationships between people, which is something that I believe all of us have the opportunity to think about as we read this week's parsha. Okay, Mirza.